present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello, and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a radio listing read for us by Charlotte Green.
The Archers. Lillian experiences a sense of déjà vu. Broadcast yesterday.
Thanks to Susan Hubble of Cornwall for sending that. Let's meet the teams. Please welcome, first on my right, Mark Steele and newcomer Fee Glover. Opposite them on my left, Andy Hamilton and Linda Smith. Mark, traditional easy question. Why is it going to cost an arm and a leg for your fingerprints?
Ah, right. It's going to be £100, isn't it? £100 in order to buy the little docket. That will mean that you are allowed to exist.
I think that's the idea of it, isn't it?
It is, absolutely, yes.
This is Charles Clark now that's doing this, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Do you know, it's much cheaper to join the RSPB. And I think the rewards are greater. Access to lovely sites and a magazine every quarter.
What worries me is that apparently the technology is already been proved to be unreliable. So these computers, you know, you get a biometric profile, don't you? And it includes a print of your iris. And apparently the computer doesn't recognise something like 8% of irises. So that presumably means that you'll be left in that position where if the computers nationally don't recognise your iris, you will have to buy new eyeballs. What will you do? You will be a non-person. And I think at the moment the technology is such that it doesn't recognise 31% of faces. Because some faces, apparently, for a computer, they're not sufficiently defined. Now, Al-Qaeda will obviously be recruiting lots of potato-faced people.
No, I was just going to say that even with the faces that they do recognise, the biometrics people have said, if you've got a sore or bandaged eye and a sore or bandaged finger, then it won't be able to recognise you at all. So all the criminals will be Pudsey Bear, basically. So we can deduce from this, it's less of an identity card, more of just a card. That's
so it. It doesn't recognise people and it doesn't remember people. This computer is based on my nan. What's the good of that? A computer that's going, you're not my grandson.
These systems are always flawed. 15 years ago, I got a tax form. It had me down as sort of like comedian or whatever it was at the top, occupation. And there was a question that said, do you earn money from any other business? And I thought, what a peculiar question. So I just put scrap metal dealer down and sent it off. And then every year since then, when I get my tax form, there's always a bit that says, how much have you earned from your scrap metal?
The government has revived its plans to introduce compulsory identity cards within 3 years under a scheme outlined by Tony Blair. Prime Minister claims identity cards will protect people from identity theft. Too late for Margaret Thatcher. She had her identity stolen by Tony Blair many years ago. Fee, who might be pushed before he can fall gracefully?
I should imagine it's Merry Liverpool supporting Michael Howard. Mm-hmm. Who is absolutely determined to stay until the autumn, and everybody else around him is absolutely determined that's not going to happen. And it's an odd one, isn't it? I've lost count of the number of people who are queuing up for this job. And it's not... Is it a job that you'd want? It's not a job that people manage to stay in for very long. There doesn't seem to be an awful lot of security going on there.
It's sort of less of a job and more of a black spot from Blind Pew.
It's a good way of putting it, yes. Yeah. You're obviously thinking what they're not thinking, and I'm agreeing thinking things.
They're beyond thinking now.
They are beyond thinking. And I think, occasionally, very occasionally, but it does seem to be that, you know, the younger Conservatives are being pushed forward, aren't they? Dear darling George Osborne, who was 34, I think, this week. He had a bouncy castle and some jelly for his birthday. And David Cameron as well, and the entire Notting Hill set. Do they come in a box? What's that look like?
He was terribly badly advised, wasn't he, Howard? I mean, he really sealed his own fate. That slogan, I remember seeing them unveil the "Are you thinking what we're thinking?" slogan on my television. And he was standing there and he had all the Tory shadow cabinet behind him and he said, "Are you thinking what we're thinking?" And I thought, well, no. Not unless you're all thinking, where have I put my keys? It's terrible. Terrible slagging. And the other one, that he was obviously being advised, because he kept repeating it. He said, people don't want a date with destiny. They want a date with their dentist. He thought, no, you have an appointment with your dentist. Because every time he said it, I conjured up this image of me in a restaurant with candles and a bloke with a mask and an Australian accent, you know, saying, well, this is very nice, Andy. I wasn't expecting anything like this.
This is the latest salvo in the Tories' phony leadership war, as rumours began to fly that Michael Howard may be forced out within weeks if he doesn't agree to bring forward the leadership election. The new Conservative constitution was discussed at a meeting on Tuesday. One MP felt it was icy cold. Another described it as one of the most fiery meetings we've ever had. The BBC weather team described it as brown with some darker brown emerging later. 2 points to Fee. Linda, why was today struck off?
Ha-ha. The BBC strike this week. What a marvellous day it was. It was just full of surprises. And I wish I'd seen the picket line, because it would have been such a sight to behold. Jeremy Paxman standing there going, what do we want? Come on, answer the question. What do we want? No, it was all very, very jolly and full of just a surreal experience. This man on the telly reading the news, Stephen Cole, normally see him on BBC World, so I sort of associate him with hotel rooms, like little sewing kits, really. And it was funny to see him out in the wider world. And then, who was that anonymous man reading the news on the radio, Charlotte?
It's Peter Jefferson.
Who's he, then?
Good question.
There you go, Peter. Don't mess with our own little Rosa Luxemburg here. Who is he? He's toast. That's who he is.
You should have your own union. National Union of, what would it be, newsreaders and allied relators of world events.
Having said that, the scabs were rather charming, weren't they? It all seemed very civilised. Like Terry Wogan went in, I mean, he wished them luck, but he obviously couldn't deprive 8 million listeners of the Commodores. That would be...
Monday saw the BBC hit by strike action over plans by Director General Mark Thompson to slash staff numbers by a fifth. Jazz and comedy replaced radio news programmes. Apparently, the unions plan to blackout BBC coverage of the G8 summit at Gleneagles. That will really hit the viewing figures. Andy, listen to this.
When you walk through a storm, hold your head up high and don't be afraid.
Andy, who had every reason not to calm down this week?
These plucky scousers. Well, I say scousers, two scousers. and they were 3-0 down, and they came back in the most extraordinary display. It was very exciting. And the hero of the hour was the goalkeeper, Jersey Dudek. It was great, the goalkeeper with the name Jersey. I just think that's perfect. But he did the sort of Bruce Grobbelaar routine on the line.
The crazy legs.
He did the crazy legs, which you're allowed to do in the rules now. But we were wondering, in terms of what you can do to put the striker off, where the line is drawn. If goalkeepers next season start mooning, are the refs going to step in and show them the yellow card? I don't know.
Revolving ties?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, shouting, behind you! As they run up to take it. But it was great. I was actually very pleased for Liverpool. It's a remarkable achievement to win the European Cup final, especially given that they didn't actually win the semi-final.
Would you be as a Chelsea fan, Andy, obviously be against having too many foreigners in the team, wouldn't you?
Well, let's not get bogged down on the statistics, Simon, but I think you will find that the Chelsea team has one more Englishman than the Liverpool team.
It's practically a sea of land of hope and glory, isn't it, Stamford Bridge?
Well, it was an astonishing shock result. Dermot Gavin's Chelsea garden was really nice.
No, it wasn't. Do you mean
like
that
it?
Funny thing with all the
lavender and
the little pods in it?
Yeah, you didn't like that.
Oh, no, that was very strange.
Did you?
Yes.
But strange in a nice way.
No.
Do you know?
I think we're being drawn into a men-women situation.
Yeah.
Do you think so?
I think we've just lost a very large male sector of the audience.
There's the open top bus parade and all that sort of thing that you do on these occasions. That's all sort of gone round Liverpool and everyone's delighted. And I thought, well, see, if Chelsea had won it, then that couldn't have happened because the open top bus would have had to go round London and you'd have just had everyone stood there going, well, it's supposed to be here 25 minutes ago. That's why I think that if the London Olympics does happen, which I very much doubt, but if there is such a thing, they should have a special London triathlon where you have to get a 133 bus down Brixton Hill, then a Northern line from Stockwell to London Bridge, and a Networth South East train back to East Croydon. If you can do that in less than 7.5 hours, you deserve a gold plaque.
In a dramatic Champions League final in Istanbul, Liverpool snatched the European Cup. Match officials ordered them to put it back and keep playing until the final whistle. Oh, there'll be letters. At the end of round one, the scores are, everybody, 4 points. And we start round two, the cutting from the Wirral champion.
Part-time cook, chef required. 2 days per week, total 18 hours. Ability to cook, an advantage.
Thanks to Dennis Shuttler for sending that in. Mark, who's demolishing his reputation in the north and failing to build on it in the south?
Ah, this will be Prescott then, presumably, who's... this is his scheme for demolishing houses or building... Not building many houses, but for loaning people the... Or a government loan of some sort. It's a good job I'm not a minister, isn't it? He's got such a grasp of detail. It's either building houses or demolishing houses, but we intend to do one or the other. There's a scheme whereby they are going to allow people to buy 3/4 of their house and the government owns the other quarter of it. I suppose that happened.
And hasn't Prince Charles decried this? He said it's absolutely dreadful, because John Prescott, that some of the houses that he wants to demolish are these Victorian terraces. And Prince Charles has said, you know, there's no point in destroying things. And I think, in fact, his words were, we should go for old, historic, characterful renovations, which is a harsh way to talk about Camilla.
What would he know? Why can't they all live in a castle?
I don't know why anyone has the bottle to just say to Prince Charles, shut up. Just go and plant a rose or kill a fox or do something you're half able to do. And leave the grown-ups to run the world.
It's John Prescott's housing policy. Thousands of homes across the north will be demolished, with 6,800 in Liverpool marked down for the wreckers ball. Opposition to the move has been so strong that on his last visit to Merseyside, John Prescott's trousers were redesignated as a brownfield site. Fee, who's unhappy about happy hours?
Well, there aren't going to be any more happy hours, are there? They're being banned in up to a third of pubs across the country, in an effort to prevent binge drinking, or being British, as we like to call it. but anyway, it's the end of happy hour.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
I'd actually rather questioned the phrase happy hour when you actually look at the people availing themselves of this facility. Really, it's sort of more, I'm trapped in a loveless marriage, which is why I'm sitting here drinking tequila at threepence a flagon instead of getting the 8:33 back to Chislehurst. Bloody hell, I never wanted to live there anyway. Hour.
It's hard to get that on a placard on a pub wall, though. I was amazed that I saw the list of the practices that pubs are going to be told they can't do anymore. And apparently, I didn't realise that included amongst them was free drinks for women. In our day and age, that seems terribly sexist, doesn't it? Presumably, that's just to get pretty girls in, is it? I don't know. Am I being naive?
Well, it doesn't distinguish, does it? They're not going to say, well, I'm not giving you a free drink. We didn't mean you. Look at the state of you. Come on, darling. I can't stand this sort of backlash against drinking. What must happen when foreigners come to this country, if you're French or Belgian or Italian or something, you come to this country and you go out quite late, because that's what they do,
and they're halfway through their first drink, and they've had a sort of, they've got one stale roll, and it's 3 minutes to 11, but the clock on the pub says 2 minutes past 11, and the bell goes, and if you're Italian, you must think, oh, maybe that means there's going to be a carnival or something.
Over 30,000 pubs belong to the British Beer and Pub Association say they will stamp out the happy hour and other promotions that might fuel drunkenness. Many pubs have been offering ridiculously cheap drinks during the happy hour. In some notorious pubs in central London, it is possible to get a pint of beer for less than £5. Linda, listen to this.
Listen, do you want to know a secret? Do you promise not to tell?
Linda, whose guilty secrets are netting worldwide fans?
Yes, this is this internet site, and you can tell all your secrets on it, secrets that you've never told anyone. They could be trivial, they could be important, and basically you send a postcard to the people who run this website, and somehow or other this postcard is turned into a picture on the internet. And people send all kinds of things. Some of them are sort of quite tragic things. There was one, I don't care about recycling, but I pretend I do. I think that was from George Monbiot. I suspect. There was another one saying, everyone's against me. I'm frightened of all the people around me. Don't know who that one was from, but that's it, really. What would you, if you had a secret, Andy, what would you post on the internet?
Well,
come on.
Yeah. Do you know what? I just suddenly realised that my life is so dull, I don't have any interesting secret to impart. No, I've met loads of prime ministers.
You're not really getting the concept of secret, Andy. It's not just a fact.
I've met them in weird circumstances, though. Jim Callaghan. Once he woke up my baby.
Now, these are secrets worth hearing, I think.
He was only tiny, and he hadn't been sleeping much, and me and my wife had not been sleeping much, so we were a bit stressed. And we were having a lovely afternoon lunch in a hotel in the countryside, and Jim Callaghan turned up in a big car, came up the steps, and he saw Pip asleep in his pushchair, and he leant over and he boomed, "What a lovely baby!" and woke him up. And it was very nearly our country's most puzzling assassination. But the other time I met Jim Callaghan, and this is absolutely...
Yes, it was in the country hotel, no. In the billiard room with the lead piping.
God, you know, and then I was having breakfast one morning, I'd just got my egg, just lovely, you know, came and sat right on top of it, Clement Attlee. Ruined it.
Now, don't get me started on Attlee, because he...
Back in the midst of time, there was a question. This is postsecret.com, an internet site that displays personal secrets people have sent in anonymously on postcards. One postcard reads, "I wish I were a popular idiot instead of a lonely genius." So it's good news, George Bush, you're halfway there. Andy, I bet you can be really, really funny about this next subject.
Oh, no, I do. They've discovered the gene that enables you to understand sarcasm. That's true. Yeah, it was very easy. All the audience have got it, obviously. And it is actually quite important because people who suffer from conditions like autism and Asperger's, you know, one of the big problems they have is that when people say things, they tend to assume that they mean it. So when we say, "Oh, that's really interesting," they think you mean it. And so it might lead to a better understanding of these kinds of illnesses. But they've discovered the genes for all sorts of things this week. They discovered the gene for baldness, which apparently is my mum's fault. Because baldness only passes down the maternal side.
But your mum's not bald, is she?
Well, I think she's been keeping it from me. I must look at that. I must look at that website. If there's... I wear a wig and my son's never worked it out.
Scientists say they've located the parts of the brain that comprehend sarcasm. The prefrontal lobe is involved in pragmatic language processes and complex social cognition, said the chief scientist, Professor Stanley Unwin. At the end of round two, everybody is level on 8 points. Before we start round three, here's a cutting from the Lincolnshire Echo.
As well as her theatre roles, which include assistant producer, script supervisor, director and coach, the 39-year-old writer also has a biology degree and 2 years postgraduate research into fungal diseases under her belt.
Yeah. Our thanks to all the many people who sent that in. Mark, why do boys think plastic is fantastic?
Ah, I am reliably informed that boys apparently have become very keen on cosmetic surgery. Is that it?
It is.
And this is a recent phenomenon, and surveys show that many boys now are having breast enlargements. And that is the answer.
The spooky thing in the survey was that the procedure, and they were 15-year-old boys, the procedure that they most wanted to have was penis enlargement. I mean, they're 15 years old. You don't want to go fully baking a baked baguette. Just...
What sort of stuff can you have done, then? I'm only asking because that's the kind of thing the audience at home will be asking. Can you have neck implants? Simon, you had work done.
I had the belly implants.
You had the belly implants.
It's looking very pert, I must say.
The magazine survey revealed teenage boys are now as body-conscious as girls. One in four boys say they would consider plastic surgery. 90% of teenage boys use hairstyling products, 50% use moisturiser, and 17% use fake tan, from which we can conclude that Kilroy Silk is starting his own private army. Fee, listen to this. Who thinks they can make the dome a pleasurable experience?
Well, I think it's a mobile phone company, and they have paid millions of pounds to rename it O2. They had the choice of Oh Dear or O2, and they went for O2. And the strange thing is that the government has yet to appoint the committee that decides what to do with the dome. So the bloke at O2 who signed the cheque for millions and millions and millions of pounds to call it O2 hasn't got the go-ahead, which seems a little bit odd. Mm. Maybe they'll text him.
Well, I just thought we'd seen the back of a dome. It really depressed me to see that the dome was back in the news. I thought, you know, it was a bit like discovering that we were sort of fighting the Russians in Crimea again. It's just such a sorry tale of national incompetence. And
you thought it had just gone, or someone, you think what the government should have done a couple of years ago would be just towed it up to Dover and left the keys in it.
Well, Mark, you're a scrap metal merchant.
The Millennium Dome is to be transformed into a music, entertainment and sports venue sponsored by the mobile phone company O2. During the 12 months it was open to the public, the Millennium Dome boasted fascinating attractions such as the Body Zone, the Faith Zone and the Pouring Public Money Down the Drain Zone. Linda, for whom was silence far from the wisest counsel?
Andy? Silence far from...
I'll tell you, I met Jim Callaghan once.
No, you never have.
Silence far from the wisest counsel.
Where about Boris Johnson on the show? He might be Prime Minister one day, wouldn't he?
Of where?
Could the answer possibly be, can we have a go?
Yeah, of course.
Go on.
Could it be Michael Jackson?
No.
Oh, I know.
Oh,
I know. Oh, is it this bloke who did the longest summing up ever?
Yes.
It was extraordinary. It was the case of the Bank of England versus the BCCI, and it's gone to penalties. And it is the most extraordinarily long case, and apparently in court the pile of files is so high between the various junior sort of legal staff that they've nicknamed it the Berlin Wall, because they can't see each other over the files.
So if the case collapses, they're dead.
Yeah.
119 days after he started, Nicholas Stadlen, QC, Defence Counsel for the Bank of England, in a case brought by the liquidators of BCCI, has finally finished the longest speech in legal history. In contrast, the record for the longest period without speaking still goes to a mid-sentence pause in a 1978 edition of Alistair Cook's Letter from America. Andy, the last question. How did a gorilla in the mist prove that love isn't blind?
Oh, this is a lovely story.
Really sweet.
This is a gorilla... She was blinded when she went to get photographed for her new identity card. she had cataracts, I believe. And she was very grumpy because she couldn't see anything. And she was bumping into other gorillas and saying, "Get out of my way," and sort of, you know, duffing up silverbacks and generally being an unpopular gorilla. And she had this operation, and she then became very friendly. So friendly, in fact, that she got pregnant. And she's now got a little baby gorilla, and she's given an interview to the News of the World. It's a very, very touching story.
It's a lovely story, and it's just, it's the classic, you know, sort of, take those glasses off. Why, Miss the Gorilla, you're fascinating. They are sort of almost human gorillas, I reckon.
They're lovely gorillas.
They're brilliant.
I would like to go and do what David Attenborough did and sit with them and tell him my anecdotes about former prime minister.
A gorilla who underwent a cataract operation has given birth. Typical NHS, you go in to have your eyesight corrected, you come out with a bouncing baby gorilla. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings of teams have brought along. Mark.
Right, well, having been brought up in Kent, I thought the Kent Messenger would be appropriate. And it says, we would like to point out that Father Paul Gibbons is not, in fact, a 32-year-old donkey, as reported in last week's paper.
It's just a small advertisement for Times Online's dating service, which is called Encounters, and the ad reads like this: be ready for the launch of Encounters Dating by uploading your member's photo now.
Linda.
Yes, thanks to Bob Brewer, who sent me this cutting from the Chew Valley Gazette. The Mendip Farmers Hunt were out hunting in the Chew Valley on the last day before the ban. They met at the home of Reg Wilkins, who has hunted for over 50 years, and his grandchildren were mounted.
And
this is from Oliver Moffat, and it was on the front cover of Prima magazine, December 2004. 420 ways to make Christmas simple.
Okay, let's look at the final score. Everybody has 16 points. And before we leave you, here's an item from the Southwark.gov website, spotted by Jackie Bullimore.
Hyde Housing Association has recently been successful in a competition to develop this council-owned site. Initial plans include building 192 new homes, half of which will be affordable.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Mark Steele, Steve Glover, Linda Smith and Andy Hamilton. The chairman was Simon Hoggett, and the news is read by me, Charlotte Green. The chairman's script was written by Lucy Clark, Simon Littlefield and George Poles. And the producer was Katie Tyrrell.